I'm Dr. Pamela Brewer, and you are listening to Mind Talk, the show that provides you with relationship health and mental health information every day. And today we're going to be talking about something that everyone in the audience, I am very clear, is interested in, which is what aging men want. We're used to hearing the question, what do women want? Today we're going to focus on what men want. I'm very pleased to introduce you to today's guest, Dr. John C. Robinson, who is author of What Aging Men Want, The Odyssey as a Parable of Male Aging. Dr. Robinson, welcome to Mind Talk.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. Glad to be here.
Now, Dr. Robinson, you've worn a couple of hats in your lifetime, including that of an author. Tell us a little bit about the other parts of your life.
Well, for 30 years, I was a clinical psychologist in the Sacramento area, so I did the very traditional things that psychologists do, but I grew impatient with the medical model and the managed care system, and eventually I moved on from being a psychologist to being I went to a seminary and became an interfaith minister, because I've always been interested in ultimate questions, ultimate issues, why we're in the mess we're in, what we could do about it, and what humanity really is all about. So I've been following this thread all my life through psychology and then spirituality and now into writing. And so I've been writing these books that try to answer that question in a very strange way. When I was a kid, my father would sit at the dinner table addressing his five sons, and after too many drinks, he would ask this question like, well, what is the meaning of life? You know, what is the role of a father? And I really got hooked on those questions. Later, I realized that they were really signs of his depression, but they touched me deeply, and I wanted to pursue a life of inquiry about matters like this.
So here we are today talking about what aging men want. And the way that you approach this is a really fascinating, I would say, sort of gentle way to ease the reader into a series of answers. And you do that by using the Odyssey as a parable of men's aging. So in 60 seconds or less, I want you to tell us about a age-old important piece of history and of writing. Tell us about the Odyssey. What's it about?
Sure. So the Odyssey is the book you probably all read in high school or were forced to read in high school. It was written 2,700 years ago by the blind poet Homer, and it presents an epic tale, a rollicking tale of an aging warrior coming home from a long and brutal war. The Trojan War was described in the previous epic, which was the Iliad, and we can talk a little bit about that as well. But so in the Odyssey, here we have Odysseus after these 10 long years trying to find his way home from the war. And though the war is over, it takes him another 10 years to get back to Ithaca. And so I wondered, well, why is that? Why would it take somebody so long? And then I began to understand that every adventure he confronts symbolically encodes one of the psychological challenges that all men have coming home from the war of life. Because all of us men grow up in a culture where whether we go to actual war or not, we get involved in this male competition for the alpha position, for making it to the top, for everything that implies. And that continues into work, where we have to worry about resumes and incomes and status and so forth. And there comes a time when we're older when we just get tired of that. You know, we're tired of that kind of life and want to come home, but it's not so easy. And what I found in the Odyssey is, much like Iron John that Robert Bly wrote about midlife, the Odyssey is a myth that describes the homecoming process in symbolic stories that are really profound. In other words, he has these 18 tales, and each one of them describes one of the developmental challenges that we guys face leaving the battlefield and coming home, because we haven't been home for a long time. So it's a fascinating depiction.
It really is. And when you talk about home, what do you mean?
Well, gosh, that's such a wonderful question. It's a sweet question. Home is coming home to yourself, who you really are, to your soul, to your family, to your mate, whoever that is, to the quality of love. Men have learned how to develop the aggressive warrior armor,
yes,
and the hard fighting side of themselves, but they have not had as much time to open softer feminine side, and that's what coming home is. It's coming home to love, really.
Now, you say, and I'm just going to ask you to make sure that you're speaking directly into the phone. You say that you came to retirement, speaking of coming home, you came to retirement unexpectedly and prematurely. Why was that? What was going on in your life?
Well, I had this very strange experience of one day, I at the end of a very long clinical day, my heart was racing in a strange way. It happened once before, and I recognized this to be atrial fibrillation.
Mm-hmm.
So I, you know, realized, well, you got to go to the emergency room back in those days for atrial fibrillation.
Mm-hmm.
And went in. They said, well, you know, the chemical processes, it didn't work this time. You need to be cardioverted, meaning there's the paddle to the chest and the shock. And I remember being terrified, but not knowing why, because the procedure is really very safe and easy to do. So anyway, in the days and weeks, and months after the procedure, I began to have, I know this is going to sound strange, body memories of an open heart surgery I had at the age of 14. And apparently, I woke up in that surgery. It's called anesthesia awareness. It happens to a lot of people, actually, more than people realize. But it was a horrific experience for me personally. As a 14-year-old boy, it was like a living autopsy. And this was all split off in my psyche and came bursting out on me. It became so compelling and so exhausting that I finally realized that I could not keep being a therapist unless I left the field and just worked on myself.
Interesting.
So I retired early and went back into therapy. I'd often been in therapy as a training experience and spent a long time working through this trauma, and it was a transition into aging. I mean, it was my initiation into this next phase of life. And I got so fascinated by the journey that I began to write about.
You talk about in your book the fact that a man, as he's facing retirement, not necessarily the fact, but the fear, perhaps, that a man mm-hmm. facing retirement and aging is at, and I'm quoting you, the mercy of powerful and unexpected forces. What are these powerful and unexpected forces?
Well, I mean, aging is perhaps the most profound developmental stage that we face as adults. And what's amazing is that it is a stage that didn't used to exist, because in all of recorded history, only 1 in 10 people even got to be 65. Well, now nearly 8 out of 10 will get there, and if you get to 65, you have another 17 to 19 years statistically left.
Mm-hmm.
So you have this huge open space, and what to do with it? Now, the forces are basically, that I've written about elsewhere, are three. One is initiation, but aging is going to initiate you into a new stage of life,
mm-hmm.
meaning that whatever happens, whether it was my heart thing, but it could also be retirement or knee injuries or being terminated or financial crisis, anything that happens in this stage that tells you that you're not in Kansas anymore, that you've entered a new stage of life.
Mm.
That's one of the forces. And men are just not ready for it. And the second force is that it's the events that follow that are a transformation of yourself and your consciousness. Everything that you were as a man, I'm speaking primarily for men here, your identity, your structure, your community, it was all around the workplace, and your identity as a worker. That disappears, and everything falls away. It's kind of like, you know, tacking a jigsaw puzzle on the wall that depicts your life and then watching the pieces fall down around you. And it's like aging is an emptying process. And so the next force is that it begins to take apart who we think we are and opens up this challenge of finding out what else we're here for in the world. And so it's a blossoming, it's an opportunity for a new kind of blossoming in this new stage, a blossoming of the true self or the betrayed self that has been put aside maybe for 30 or 40 years can finally come out and flourish. And then the final task is that it's a transformation of the way we see the world, because we begin to see the world as an infinitely precious and beautiful place, and that's one of the natural stages of this process. It's a lot of work goes on here.
I was going to say, because certainly as you began to describe all the things that go into one's psyche, if you will, as they are confronted with, and for many people it's a confrontation with the idea of retirement and aging, it sounds pretty scary. And so, of course, we know that there are lots of folks who run away from aging like they were running away from a 19-alarm fire.
That's exactly right. You know, and men, the culture of men want guys to do the typical male thing, which is to conquer aging. And so in the early phases of aging, well, I've got friends who were climbing Mount Everest, you're learning how to bungee jump or ride big waves. It's the idea that you can overcome aging if you just build up your body and, you know, play a lot of golf and have the right attitude and nutrition. But aging wins in the end. That doesn't really work. And so none of us are really prepared for this desert of time and space that happens in front of us. And that's where the going really gets bumpy.
The idea of the aging process being something that it's inevitable, it's just there in front of your face, although it is, albeit a bumpy road. You know, it's interesting because I think everyone who is working outside of the home or working inside of the home, I mean, you know, intellectually, you know, at some point that that's going to begin to slow down. But typically, we don't look at it in the way that you described it a few minutes ago as this wonderful opportunity to sort of move into a different phase. Again, we run away from it like it's the last thing we want to do. And so as I look at the book that you have written and the way in which you have approached looking at the process, you know, I think it's always easy to look at what somebody else is doing first before you look at yourself. And I think that's precisely what you've done in this book, which I would suggest is very gently written. What's your thought about that?
Yeah, well, I think it really is a roadmap, you know, of the each of these vignettes and every, these adventures that Odysseus has. It opens out to be a task, and if we can translate it into everyday terms, and decode the symbols, we realize, oh, yeah, I need to do that. Oh, that's another one that I need to work out. Oh, this is another piece that I need to figure out how I'm going to deal with. So each of these is a developmental step that's like kind of being on a raft, you know, drifting down a river. We keep turning the corners and going further, and one day we really come home. We are home to ourselves.
And again, There's you ask a series of questions throughout what aging men want, and one of the questions you ask, which I think is really a profound one, because I suspect it's true for many more folks than would readily admit it, is: do you believe that aging is really just a period of waiting for death to rob you of everything that matters? We're going to take a break, but when we come back, I'd like to pick up right there, because that is such a profound statement, and I think it's such a true statement for many people. And of course, what you're saying is that's not useful and that's not true. Do you believe that aging is really just a period of waiting for death to rob you of everything that matters? That sounds like such a depressing perspective.
Yes, that's such a grim perspective, and of course it's based in our evolutionary history. I mean, several hundred years ago, and for most of our developmental history, aging was a grim prospect. I mean, you got old. There was no medicine for most of the things that went wrong. You didn't live that long. You were a burden on the people to take care of. It was not a happy prospect, and so we carry forward these beliefs and these expectations in the culture, and also, because we've had so little experience with this new developmental stage, it's just really opened up for the last 15 years, We don't know what to do. So this book and others are trying to provide a different kind of expectation and a different kind of roadmap for this aging process. We do have to face death. Death is coming. Death is one of the inevitabilities of life. But I wrote a book about fairy tales and aging. And in fairy tales, when the protagonist meets the figure of death, everything changes. Suddenly, you know, his world changes and he has insights and he begins to understand what he's left to do with life. So aging visits us not as an enemy and not as someone that's going to defeat us, but as a stimulus to look inwards and say, what has my life been all about? One of the great tasks of aging is life review. I mean, Where have I come from? What have I done? Who am I? What's unfinished in my life? Have I told people that around me that I love them? have I prepared my way into a dying experience? These are all the kinds of questions that aging asks of us. So instead of being like walking off the end of a pier, which I think a lot of men feel this way, they just want to keep busy and hope they just drop dead, you know, instantly.
Right.
It is, in fact, a growth process that is a gift not only to themselves, but to their families and to their kids and to their grandkids.
Now, speaking of gifts, you talk about what I would suggest is certainly a skill, but also a gift. You talk about dream interpretation. And, you know, for years and years, the whole idea of interpreting dreams had a whole bunch of reactions just within the broader culture, from this was a wonderful thing to do to this was wickedness and witchery and everything in between. You talk about it as a skill and a valuable skill. What is the value of dream interpretation? Can one actually interpret one's own dreams? And why does that matter inside of this particular book in which you use the Odyssey as a parable for male aging?
Well, dreams are just a wonderful, wonderful resource inside of us. You know, the left hemisphere of the brain is the language hemisphere, and it has to do with narrative, and we explain and talk and conceive and conceptualize. And so the right hemisphere of the brain is symbolic. It takes all our life experiences and makes them into symbols and metaphors and images and so forth. So if when we have a dream at night, it's really the right hemisphere providing us a kind of a personalized fairy tale about what's going on in our life. It's the same process that we use throughout our history to create legends and fairy tales and myths. It's the same symbolic process, so that you can use the things you learn about dream interpretation, you can apply them to myth and fairy tale and begin to unpackage the same teachings. It's just two ways of describing the world. And yes, you can learn about dream interpretation. It's not nearly as hard as people think.
Mm. Now, in learning about dream interpretation, can one not be aware of all the skills that go into dream interpretation and still benefit from taking a look at what aging men want?
Oh yes, of course. So okay. You don't have to be, you know, what I've done with what aging men want is to decipher the meaning of these symbols and put them into language that we can all follow.
Now, one of the things that you talk about in terms of men retiring is that there are many men who retire, but not really. And they may retire one job, but they are just keeping themselves as busy, if not busier, than all get out. And it sounds like you're saying that that may be part of their own anxiety about aging and about ending.
Yeah, you're exactly right. You know, we end our careers, and then we face this great void, the abyss, and then we suddenly go, oh my God, I got to do something about this, and we kick back into our compulsive masculine overdrive, and then we start playing golf every day and make it into a war game, you know, we can redo the entire backyard, and then we're going to, you know, organize the house and so forth, and our wives kick us out because they don't want us to organize the house. But the point is, we do this kind of frenzy of activity because it is scary, but that won't last. I mean, you can do it, and then as one guy was telling me recently, you know, after about a year of playing golf every day, he finally asked himself, what am I doing? You know, this is not fun anymore. I hate the game.
Especially now that I'm playing it every day and getting frustrated.
Really? It only gets worse.
You are listening to Men's Monday on Mind Talk. We'll be right back.
we are back as I continue my conversation with Dr. John C. Robinson. I'm Pamela Brewer. Dr. Robinson, one of the growth questions you ask is, you ask the reader, and I now ask the listener to look at whether or not there are perhaps vulnerabilities behind that mask that so many of us wear when we walk outside the door.
Yeah, I mean, so what we had to do as children in growing up in this very competitive culture and this performance-oriented culture, particularly guys who have to, you know, compete in sports and for girls and in, you know, and all the way through life, we cover up our doubts and our fears, and we put away the softer side. We put away who we really are inside oftentimes for years because we think it's not acceptable. We think it's not going to take us anywhere. And so the task of midlife, for example, is to put away the false self and to give birth to the true self, to make space for who you really are, to come out in the world. What happens in growing up, though, is that when we betray the self, it hurts. And when you, and depression is really a symptom of the fact that we had to give up on ourselves. We had to betray who we really are. And so the self, the real self, falls down inside, falls away, and says, I guess he doesn't care about me. I guess I'm not important after all. And so we can keep on pretending that we're succeeding in the world by making more money or having a bigger house or whatever people think they want to do. But the truth is that we have to come home to this abandoned self inside and let it have its life, because that's what we were born to do. That's why we came here.
Now, you know, we're talking about, you know, coming home to the true self and really paying attention to the softer, gentler side. And, you know, for many people listening, I'm sure those are like sort of, yeah, what does that mean? And so what I ask you is, what does that actually mean, coming home to yourself, you know, paying attention to the softer, gentler side? As you've said, you know, many men, depending on their age, they've absolutely been socialized that the softer, gentler side was that thing that women struggled with that they didn't have to deal with. Now you're saying it needs to be an intentional exploration. What's going on?
Yeah, boy, you're so right on that. So, and that's why I've been creating men's groups and particularly older men's mentoring groups, because men can't always talk about this stuff with women, even the women who love them. They just feel awkward about it. But you put guys in a group and you make some simple ground rules, like we're not talking about politics, religion, or sex or accomplishments. And then we ask them instead, what does it seem like to be in this stage of life? And guys start talking. They really do start talking about, you know, I'm lost, I'm confused, I don't know where I stand, I don't know who I am anymore, I feel worthless, I feel invisible. These are natural and understandable and appropriate feelings, and the key to dealing with feelings is to voice them. Any feeling you put into words will change by expressing it, and you will grow more in touch with yourself, and the feelings will evolve. And so there's a process of working down into our feelings and then coming back out again that allows us to recover that hurt and wound itself, bring it back to life, and give us and create a new life force. Softness and vulnerability are not weaknesses. In fact, it takes a lot of courage for a guy to sit there and say, I'm lost. I'm depressed. I don't know who I am anymore. And yet it's the door that opens into a new life for them to be able to do that.
You've just said something that is certainly interesting and certainly bears repeating, which is that softness and vulnerability requires actually a great deal of courage, and that it is not a sign of weakness. There are so many people, male and female, who see particularly men as being weak if they express what somebody else might identify as being soft or vulnerable, if they express feelings, if they shed a tear. Again, men and women very often look at that person askance and want to know what's wrong with them. And you're saying that those are very brave things to do and there's nothing wrong with them.
Not only is there nothing wrong with them, but that is the journey and the path of healing. I mean, actually, to speak the truth to people who you trust and you feel safe and close to is like letting yourself out of a cage. It's like finally beginning to tell the truth about your life. And yeah, it's going to hurt, but the hurt's in there anyway. I mean, the hurt's not going to go away by stuffing it further down.
Okay.
The hurt's only going to go away by saying it. And if that brings tears, well, so be it. I mean, we all cry. This is part of the human mechanism is to work through feelings and to cry. But the thing is that if one guy in a group expresses tenderness to weakness or grief or sorrow, gosh, the next guy in the group will do it too. And then the third guy will want to get in. And then everybody will be talking about it because they'll finally feel that it's okay to do this. And that is often a turning point in a men's group because men are so grateful finally to be able to talk about how they feel. When all their life they had to be the compulsive warrior and stuff it and keep their shield and sword out, you know, and be tough. And it was always a lie.
And, you know, I hear you talking about men's groups. And, of course, in this society, you know, everybody's heard about groups, but they typically believe that those groups are women's groups. And very often they are, you know, for whatever the topic is, it's a group of women. But you're really focusing in on the strength and the value of men of a similar age and a similar stage in life getting together and having their own dialogue with themselves that sounds like it is filled with truth, perhaps for the first time in their lives.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, a lot of guys don't really have close male friends.
I mean,
have guy friends and they play golf or watch sports and stuff, but they don't have the kind of friends where you drop into this other truthfulness, this other place. And I've created a lot of men's groups, and gosh, the men's groups I created 20 years ago are still going.
Wow.
It's not like these guys feel they have to go. They don't even are supposed to go. They just don't want to miss a group because they don't want to miss anything that the other guys are talking about in terms of their life and what they discover. And so it really is not just for women. It's for men, and it's one of the real gifts of age it's been one of the crowning achievements of age to sit in the company of other men your age and say, wow, this is what it is to get old.
And in your book, I noticed that you actually give some guidance for how to start an older men's mentoring group, which I think is also important because there may be people listening saying, okay, a group, is that two guys sitting together and having a cup of coffee? What does a group look like? But you actually go through that in your book, which I think is really important. There's also a series of growth questions that you put to the reader. And when we come back from the break, I'd like to start with one of them. It's not the first, but I think it's certainly a very powerful one. And so we will pick up with a growth question from Dr. John C. Robinson, What Aging Men Want. This is Pamela Brewer. You're listening to Mind Talk on Transitions Tuesday. Dr. Robinson, one of the growth questions you ask is, what past persona or event would someone most like to revisit? And what do you fear from the revisiting? And who or what from your past needs to visit you? These are really thoughtful, powerful, I think unexpected questions that you're asking folks to ask of themselves.
Yeah, you know, and it's also such a natural process of aging, this process of life review. You know, when you get people talking about it, and that's one of the tasks we do in a men's group is, you know, tell me the story of your life. Because you get through life, and it's often such a survival struggle and a battle and so forth, that we don't have time to integrate what's happened. The times we failed, the times we succeeded, the times we hurt people and feel guilt and regret about that, but we didn't have time to work it out. There's so many things we just put on the shelf and close the closet door. And then aging, it's time to open the door and bring that stuff out again. It's not a pity party, and you're not, you know, wallowing in misery or anything. It's just that there are wounds inside, and there are hurts, and there are resentments and betrayals that we need to work through if we are going to really come home to our family, because that's the stuff that gets in the way of relationships. If you feel resentful about the way your father treated you or the way your mother treated you or the way your wife abandoned you early on or something like that, that stuff is going to affect your relationships when you really try to grow them as an aging man. So it's really important to be able to identify for yourself what those wounds and issues are. All of them can be managed. And we need to make a distinction between curing and healing. There's a lot of stuff that can't be cured. I mean, we're not going to, like, not be hurt or not be, you know, have a father die when we're 10 or something. But we can do healing. And healing means that we allow that event and that experience to be part of our life, that we have our feelings about it and finally include it as who I am, as a profound teaching process. I come out of it saying, I learned from that experience and it made me who I am today.
We've been talking specifically about what aging men want. Is it so different than from what aging women want?
I'm sure it's not different from what aging women want. It's just so I felt like me, because men don't talk about it very well, and they definitely don't talk about it very well with women, that I needed to make a space for them to have their own really sacred conversation. But there are some differences. I think, you know, women have been, in their lives, have been more multitaskers. They've had to wear many hats all the time. And so as men approach aging, they want to give up the masculine, hard-driving, aggressive side of themselves and develop what's called the feminine side, the softer, more loving, gentle side, and play with the grandkids. Women really have done so much nurturing and caring. They want to sometimes become more aggressive, or you know, it's like the crone symbol. The symbol of the crone, or the crone archetype, really is about older women who are fierce and strong and into social justice and activism and righteous about the way the world needs to be fixed. It's a wonderful symbol of women becoming, standing in their own ground and becoming strong. But one of the tasks that they have to face is that they have to disentangle themselves from all the way that they are still, I guess you'd say, codependent with their grown kids even in their life. You know, that they're still trying to take care of people and trying to make sure they're okay, and, you know, giving up themselves to continue a task that is already done. Now they need to let go of that and find a new direction for themselves.
Continuing a task that is already done. I think that's probably a critical issue for many people. How do you give up that task that actually is your job within it is complete? You don't need to do that anymore, and not see it as a loss, but see it as an opening to give you more space to do what's important for you.
You said it so beautifully. That's right. You know, we keep trying to fix our children. We keep trying to make things okay. We keep trying to, like, heal things that we think went wrong in the past when they've already gone light years ahead of that into their world. And it's their job to emancipate, and it's our job to let them go, and then eventually to meet in new ways later on. But it's not our job to be their best friend all the way through life.
And there's so many folks, as you well know, who really have a hard struggle with that idea. Let's talk a little bit about the guilt and the regret and the shame, particularly for aging men. Is there a particular way for them to look at those experiences? Because I think you're right. So many men don't want to look at that and try to put that someplace else and think about other things and do other things. It seems to be very scary for many men. Well, for people, but certainly for today's conversation, for men.
Yeah, shame is such a painful emotion, and I think we need to start by universalizing it. We've all been shamed. We've all felt shame. We've all made ourselves feel shame and guilt. And so it's that shame is associated with that feeling of being just irreversibly awful, bad, and a terrible person, and worthless, and so forth. And so we really need to start off by saying we've all been there, we've all felt that, we've all caused that. Let's put this on a table and begin to unwrap it, because shame will control you if you don't deal with it. And so you'll all be hiding from it and be trying to not be like that anymore. And in effect, you're caught in the shame cycle, always trying to avoid it. Men, I think, have shame about the way they've been in relationships, or maybe perhaps the way they've been unfaithful in relationships. They have shame about the way they treated other men in the competitive workplace, and that's really painful for men, what they did to step over somebody else to reach the top, or when they were shamed by some, you know, really nasty boss who just ground them under his heel and made them feel like they're total failures. These are things that are part of the life story that we've come to sort out in the aging time.
You make the recommendation that, and I laugh a little bit as I say this because it's something that I've certainly said a lot of times myself. Don't repeat the past. You've done that enough.
Yeah, and we will repeat the past if we aren't conscious of it and if we aren't processing why we are so caught up in it.
And, you know, when
all the problems we have with our relationships are really opportunities to you know, they're always because of me. It's about me, not you. Whatever conflict I have with you as my spouse or my friend or my coworker is a lot about me, because I'm the one who can't deal with what's going on. I'm the one that needs to do the work. And, you know, I know it's men feel oftentimes full of shame about the idea of going to therapy. Oh, I have to go to therapy. You know, I'm some kind of an inadequate person. Mm-hmm. I think going to therapy is one of the greatest things we can do. It's a heroic journey of just going in and facing yourself and letting somebody else know you that deeply and recovering your soul. I mean, it's one of those wonderful processes. You got to find the right therapist, and it's
right.
Not about just fixing yourself in 5 sessions.
Right.
But if you let it be a growth experience, you know, I probably had 10, 12 years of therapy, and I don't feel bad about it at all. I think it's allowed me to be so much more full as a person and rich as a human being.
And just as I'm talking to you and certainly have looked at what aging men want, it just seems like there's a sense of peacefulness and completeness that you kind of live in. I mean, it's sort of an aura that you give off.
You finally get there. Yeah. You get there and you realize you don't got to climb any more mountains. You don't have to fight any more, you know, windmills. You know, you can relax into the river and you can float around the corner and you can watch the world go by and you can open your heart. And that's a kind of a consciousness that is what aging is about. It's opening the heart into a state of presence, the presence of the divine, the presence of the world, the beauty of everything around you. It's as if you suddenly get that you've been living in the wrong world, that the world that you actually see in front of you, your yard, the color of the trees, the beauty of the sun glancing off your grandchild's hair. I mean, it's so ecstatically wonderful. You say, oh my gosh, I'm home. I'm happy. I can't tell you how happy I am to have my children's children on my lap, you know, and just playing. Or getting down on my knees and playing tracks, you know, on the floor and building these little train constructions and stuff. It is so fun. And then it's almost like grandparents and grandchildren have this kind of conspiracy that it, against the parents,
yeah.
That it's okay to play. It's okay to not be performing or improving yourself. Here's an important concept. Men in this aging process go from doing to being.
Mm.
You see, it's not about doing anymore. You've done your doing. It's about taking a deep breath and relaxing and being where you are, what you are, and seeing it as if for the first time in your life.
And there's a mantra that you offer men, stop, feel, and love. What's that about?
Well, that was a gift to me from one of the guys that I worked with. Yeah, I mean, it's like he just would remind himself, okay, you know, you're in this conflict with your son or your wife or somebody or the guy who cut you off. Stop. Don't go any further down that road. What are you feeling? Open up the feeling, yeah, I'm hurt, I'm angry, and blah, blah, blah. Let that stuff out. And then once that's kind of aired out, love, just love, for no reason, just because, and it will make your world so much better. Even love what's wrong with the world. You cannot heal something that you're not loving.
Hmm. You talk about the series of things that are important to aging men. And you know, what's interesting is that on the one hand, you talk about the fact that men have a tendency as they're fighting aging to almost try to be all things to all people, and they're overworking and they're over-volunteering and they're just doing way too much. At the same time, though, that you talk about the importance and the gifts of being able to be creative and engage in work, but passion-filled and meaningful work for that man, for that time in his life.
Yeah. So, I mean, we, because of our fear, we get crazy about, you know, volunteering for everything and doing everything at once. to bring forth, and to get in touch with how we really feel, the true self. The true self doesn't have any need to prove anything. It just wants to be what it is and to be creative. And so if you can discover where your creativity lies, what gives you joy, where passion grows for you, then you will find a new stream of becoming, being and becoming, that will give your life a brand new impetus and purpose. And so, but it's very different. I have a friend who was a very well-known minister who has fallen in love with horses. He spends time with horses. He owns two horses now. He loves them. He's into interspecies communication. It makes him so happy. I have another friend who is into genealogy, and because he's trying to get all his Irish ancestors labeled and build this family, and it's his way of coming home to his roots in Ireland. And I can tell you 20 stories about guys who have found things like that that just make them so happy. That's the passion coming back. It's not, you can't do the stage the way people tell you to. People will say, well, you should be doing this. You should go there. You should volunteer for this. It won't work. You've got to take the time and make the space to know who you are, to know what your gift is. We all come into the world with gifts, and they're not the same. The gifts differing each person. So find out what your gifts are and open them and play with them, and you'll be giving the world much more than if you were constantly, sweeping the floor or building houses.
And, I think that we're going to take a break, but what a lovely place to take a break at. Find the gifts that you come into the world with. We all do. Find those gifts and open them and play with them and enjoy them. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. Hello, folks. This is Pamela Brewer, host of Mind Talk, continuing my conversation with Dr. John C. Robinson as we continue the conversation about aging men and what they want as they age. And there are some things that, Dr. Robinson, you have indicated that aging men want. They want to be seen as unique. They want to keep learning. They want to keep finding meaning. Why are these things so important as they're aging?
One of the most important things in a healthy aging is not even exercise. It's not even the right medication. Just the magic is purpose. We need to have a purpose, but purpose does not come from the head. It comes from the heart and soul. So if your aging is going to be healthy and vital, you've got to begin to get in touch with, why am I here? What is it that I do best? What is it that I love to do? How do I give my love to other people? So aging men, one of the tasks then for them is to rebuild their life around this new fire, this new orientation to life, which allows them to grow again, and sometimes for the first time, because some guys have put away their growing after the age of 10 or 7 or something, and never really had a chance to pick up that process of becoming who they are. So the purpose is about finding purpose, and it goes all the way to the very end of life. Even in our dying months, we have a purpose. We can share our love and our heart and our soul with people that love us, and we can show them what it means to be vulnerable, what it means to die with dignity and love. And I mean, it goes all the way to the end, this process. It's not just being toughening it out.
And, you know, even as you say, die with dignity and with love, you know, we both know that there are people who will do anything they can to avoid that word die. And clearly what you're saying gently, affirmatively, and consistently is that that's just kind of part of life. So look at it with less fear, and then it gives you, again, the space to be more of who you are. If you aren't so consumed in the fear of what will happen when you're not here.
Yes, you know, and I think as you get more in touch with your own inner self, your own ground of being, and as you get closer to the end, you begin to have intuitions and intimations of what this dying process is about. And I think you begin to discover, you know, this is not so scary. This is the transition. I mean, it's not that you get that from religion necessarily, you get that from a book, you get that from your own intuition, and you begin to relax into a process. The body and the psyche and the soul know how to die, and they know how to die well. I mean, our process is to not freak out about that, because all we do is identify with our persona, but instead to give that up and to relax into it and to find out that it's really, you're relaxing into a flowing stream of love, and that's okay.
Is it important to have a particular religious perspective or base as you approach the aging and go through the aging process?
You know, we need to distinguish between religion and spirituality.
Right.
And religion, you know, has to do with the teachings and the rituals and so forth. And spirituality is kind of like what meaning you give to those ideas in your own life. And mysticism is the firsthand experience of the divine. So I think it's very important for people to begin to explore their own spirituality, to ask themselves the questions about their religious teachings, mm-hmm. and what they deeply believe inside and what their questions or fears are, and have a way to kind of work on that. And then also to begin to have a kind of a prayer life or a meditation life or a contemplative life where they can begin to put aside all this thinking stuff and begin to sense what the divine is all about. It's all around us. It's all through us. It's everywhere. And as we open to it, we begin to relax and find out that, you know, it's been here all along. We were too busy to notice.
So what I'm hearing you saying, I believe, is that the issue really isn't religion as such. It really is spirituality and your version of spirituality and your experience of it for you.
Exactly. Does your spirituality make you happy? Does it make you feel fulfilled, or is it frightening? I mean, so it's important to kind of process that, because you don't want to reach the end terrified of dying. I mean, that just, you know, you'll still die and you'll still go where you go, but it's like that makes it much harder than it needs to be. My wife was a hospice social worker for many, many years. She taught hospice. And you know, everybody at the end dies peacefully, but some people struggle with it so hard because of their fears, and it's just the suffering is unnecessary.
Now, you also ask people, while you're talking about a process and sort of an internal gentility, if you will, you're also saying, ask yourself some sort of daily living questions. Am I taking care of my responsibilities to family, friends, and community? Are there legal, financial, moral things that I still need to do or to be aware of? So it sounds like both sides of the coin, you're saying, are perhaps equally as important?
Oh, yeah, sure. There are some really important tasks, you know, the whole living will and estate management. And you know, it's like if you have an older friend and he's beginning to move into dementia, you have an obligation to be there for him and his wife or her wife or husband or whatever. You know, the aging process provides all sorts of new things that we're asked to do in this process of caring for each other. So it's a very rich garden of giving.
A rich garden of giving. For those who are listening who are thinking, you know, I hear him, I get it, I don't really want to get it, are there first steps that folks can begin to take? And again, because we're talking about men in particular, I ask that you direct your comments specifically to men, to a man who is perhaps in his 50s or 60s versus a man who's in his 70s or 80s. They're in different places in their lives and in their lifespan. What are some first steps for them to take? What are some things you want them to consider?
Well, the guy in his 50s, you're right, he's still at the tail end of his performance role, and so he's still out there doing those things. And it doesn't really occur to him, he just has a sort of a happily ever after fantasy of what retirement is going to be. He's going to read the books he's been missing and you know, go sailing and so forth. And the guy in his 70s is realizing that my body's changing. I don't have the strength I used to have. My senses are weakening. I am beginning to dissolve and beginning to deconstruct in a way that life has intended. And I need to begin to understand why this is happening and how do I embrace it with my whole self, because it's going to be a transformational experience in the final stage of life. I think the best way people can prepare is to, you know, just begin to recognize it is a growth stage. It's a new stage of life. It's not anything like what you lived before. Mm. Read about it, learn about it, talk to older people, you know, explore your fears, join an older man's group, you know, get into the data of it, and so that you can begin to find out what your journey is going to be. Everybody's got their own way of going through aging.
Now, as you talk about aging, and you talk about the gentleman who's in his 70s or 80s, and you use words like dissolve and deconstruct, I think you may have just lost some people. I think you may have just scared some folks.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to get too scary. But, you know, there is a sense that your energy is diminishing, that your life story really is kind of a fiction now, and you're really no longer identified with all the things you used to be and all the things you used to do. There's a softness about getting up. The inside of you is still timeless and ageless. It doesn't seem to have an age, but the outside of you, well, it's hard to walk sometimes. Your knees are creaky and it really aches, and you wonder how much longer you're going to live. And so it's a different terrain, you know. And yeah, from the point of a 50-year-old, that's a scary, scary process. But from the point of the guy inside it, if he's worked on himself, did you ever read the book Tuesdays with Maury?
Yes.
I mean, here's a guy who's dying of this terrible disease, but he is using it, his process, to share it with friends and his wife, and let people care for him and bathe him in a way that is a new sort of relationship that he feels that he's teaching about what this time is about for us. Mm. So there's always something to give. I think people who have AIDS and caregivers often come to just love their caregivers and want to give back to them and help them with their lives and help them with their kids and so forth. There's always something to give. But the process of disassembling ourselves is natural. I mean, look at it with your pets. It just slows down and it quietly ends.
That's true. Dr. John C. Robinson, author of What Aging Men Want, The Odyssey as a Parable of Male Aging. Thank you so much for joining us today on this edition of Mind Talk. Is there a website that you would like to refer folks to?
Yes, please. Thank you. Come visit me. My website is www.johnrobinson.org, and I will. You can learn about my work, learn about aging, and you can write me emails. I'll be happy to answer your emails. And this is just an opportunity for us to get better acquainted and to learn about what this time might be for you.
So that is johnrobinson.org.
Yes, thank you for that.
Thank you. Mind Talk is the show that provides you with relationship health and mental health information every day. On Men's Monday, we focus on all things for and about men. Thank you for listening to this edition of Mind Talk. You can also listen to Mind Talk on demand at
myndtalk.org. The managing producer is Jim Brown and 26x2 Communications. Assistant to the executive producer is Lede Battle. Social media coordinator is Lee Mahan. Antonio Slade, Ariel Medley, and Janice White are members of the production team. Thank you all very much for your help. Mind Talk is brought to you daily as an educational public service, and it is not intended to replace any work that you might choose to do with a licensed medical, mental health, or other professional. Mind Talk is produced by Jim Brown and 26x2 Communications, and it is available to you on demand 24/7 by going to myndtalk.org, or you can simply go to iTunes and download the Mind Talk app. If you would like to be in touch with me directly, you can send an email to pamela@mindtalk.org. That is a confidential email address. Only I will see it. So again, that's pamela@myndtalk.org. And folks, remember always, if it's unacceptable, well, it's unacceptable. Take care.